Well, hello again, everyone. This is Art Pauly, your mobile estate planning attorney. You can always reach me at area code 916-207-7526, or my email address is artpauly, that's P-A-U-L-Y, at paulylaw.com, or go to my website, paulylaw.com, for more information on how you can reach me and some of the things that we can do with estate planning. I want to take a few minutes today to talk a little bit about funding the trust. And funding is something that is usually foreign to most people that don't really understand a lot about trust, but it is one of the most important things that you can do when you're establishing a properly done estate plan. I do a lot of estate administration in my practice, and I'm finding that there are two major reasons why families have a problem with trust-based estates. The first one is they can't find the trust documents. So make sure you protect those. Make sure your family knows where they are, the original documents. But the second most common one is funding. We find assets that have been acquired that are not properly funded into the trust. Funding is basically putting the trust name on the title for assets. Generally, to transfer assets to your trust, you must execute new documents of title, deeds to real property, signature cards for your bank accounts, change of beneficiary forms, pension plans, individual retirement plans, and life insurance. That's generally what you have to do to fund the trust. What I usually tell people is funding the trust is nothing more than when you acquire an asset and the people you're acquiring the asset from asks you, what name should I put on the title? You give them the name of your trust. Usually it's just that simple. But again, it is something that a lot of people don't think about doing after the trust is initially completed. Now, I do all the funding initially when a trust is set up. We do a lot of the funding that we can do. Some banks will not allow the attorney to do that, so I supply you with proper letters of direction and whatnot for banks and finance companies to get certain assets into the name of the trust. But it is something that you need to continue to do after the trust has been completed. And that's where most people fall down in doing this. Now, I will say I've had a lot of clients over the years that I've gone back and talked to them years later, and, oh, they've just done a great job. All the funding is done. They keep it up. And that's the best way to make sure that your family is going to stay protected by the trust that you originally created for them. The funding of the trust, again, is just something that you need to do. It's something you need to think about. So many people these days equate a living trust with a will. And many times a will is something you just create it and you put it in a shelf or in a safe deposit box, and you will likely never see it again. A trust is quite a bit different because a trust controls assets while you're alive also, as well as after you pass on. But in order for the trust to work, it has to have assets. I like to refer to it as a bowl of fruit, so to speak. And you put fruit in, you take fruit out as you wish. And the same thing is true of a trust. The trust is that bowl that holds your assets. You put assets in, you take assets out. But the process for doing that is important. What brought this subject to mind today in particular was I was just consulting with some of my colleagues on a listserv we have online. And out of a lot of attorneys that responded, there were several that said, well, all you need to do is make a list in the trust on a schedule of everything you want in the trust and your funding is done. And when you pass away, of course, your family would have to do a petition to the court to deem all those issues, all those properties, those assets in the schedule as becoming part of the trust. Quick and simple process. Well, that process is anything but quick and simple. Not to get into the weeds here, but it is a Hegstat petition. It is based around California Probate Code 850, but it requires a petition to the court, which means a court date, filing fees, documents filed with the court, notices to everybody. You're generally talking about at least 60 days, sometimes more than that, to get a hearing date set up. And there is an expense to it. And the whole idea of setting up a trust in the first place is to avoid expenses to your family when you pass on or become mentally incompetent. So I really got into a discussion with them about doing that. I think it's a bad idea of doing that. So the best way is, of course, we do a schedule. That's part of what we do. But the best way is to do, as I had mentioned, that's actually retitle property into the trust. Now, some ways of doing that, we start with the Certificate of Trust, which you all should have gotten or will be getting with your estate plan. It's what I kind of like to call a little mini trust. It basically says that you've created a trust and you are the trustee and you have the power to control the assets and funding and documents, all of that kind of thing. It's usually 2 pages long. It is signed and notarized. And there's a statement on it about the California Probate Code that says that financial institutions can depend on this form in lieu of the actual trust document. Now, there are a lot of institutions out there that will insist on seeing an entire trust document. And while I disagree with that, I disapprove of it, I don't like other people having copies of your documents in their files, but then you reach a point where you say, well, I'm not going to give them a copy of my trust, and they're going to say, well, we're not going to open the account for you. So you make a choice. You must either go to another bank or you comply with their request. Unfortunately, that's the way it ends up a lot of times, and you have to make that decision. But aside from that, the idea is to get the bank accounts or whatever into the name of the trust. Now, they will ask you for a tax ID number. The tax ID number for the revocable living trust is you or your spouse's Social Security number, the same as any other account. Now, irrevocable trusts and other kinds of trusts are a little different, and that's not going to be part of our discussion here today, but generally the tax ID number will be your Social Security number. The trust will have a name. You will see it on the Certificate of Trust. That name is the name that goes on the title to the documents, the title to the house, the title on the bank account, on the cards on the bank accounts, whatever the case may be. Cash accounts are the same way. There is a name that goes on the account, and that name should be the name of the trust. What this does is, if something did happen to you, if you were to die or to become mentally incompetent or unable to deal with your affairs, even temporarily, the next person in line that you've named in the trust could easily take over and manage your affairs for you without a lot of hassles at the banks and other financial institutions. So that's the first thing to do, is to take a look at doing that. What about investment accounts? Now, investment accounts can vary quite a bit. Usually it's stocks that are done through a stock broker such as Charles Schwab or Merrill Lynch or one of those types, or even the banks. But and again, the way you fund those is you put the trust name on the account. Pretty simple. You contact them, give them a copy of the Certificate of Trust, and they will go ahead and do whatever paperwork they need to do to get that asset titled properly into the name of the trust. Now, actual stocks in a company, many people still own stocks themselves. The correct way to do that is to go back to the agent with the company that is in charge of the stocks and transferring stocks and have them put the stock into your own name. Now, this is generally not something that I can do for you, but what I do is one of the things is to put an assignment where I sign those stocks to the trust. It's a separate document in the portfolio that just says we are assigning everything to our trust. That at least gets you started on doing that, but the best way is to go back to the agent and to do that correctly that way. Personal effects are another issue that comes up. How do we deal with personal effects? Well, a personal effect, you would give it to the trust the way you would give it to anybody else. Generally, personal effects don't have title certificates. You don't have title certificates for your dishes in the closet or for your dining room table or things of that nature. You just say, I want it to go to this person. A trust correctly done will have a personal property memorandum attached to it where you can actually write in things of personal property that you would want to give to somebody. And that's generally how you do that. Trusts also have a general transfer type of language in it that says all of my personal property is going to belong to the trust. That way you've got that taken care of. We're going to get into a little bit of weeds now, I guess. I guess the common term you hear is we're going to get a little wonky. I'm not really sure what that term means, but it means we're going to kind of get a little esoteric and we're going to talk about some things that are not easily explained. We're going to talk about retirement plans. Now, you all have retirement plans, at least most of you do, and I'm talking about IRAs, 401ks, 408bs, all those kinds of things that are out there. These are all qualified plans, Roth IRAs. These cannot be put into the name of the trust because the trust is not an individual. If you put an IRA into the name of your trust, it will all become due and payable and it will be dissolved. And then you're looking at penalties and taxes. We don't want to do that. But what you can do is you can name the trust as a beneficiary. But this also has some problems with it, because if you do pass away and your beneficiary becomes the trust on that IRA, again, the trust can't own it. So the IRA has to be dissolved, and the trust is responsible for all the penalties and all those kinds of things that go along with it. So what we do is make sure you name somebody, name your heirs on the IRA as the beneficiaries. You name the heirs, and then they have the option of rolling those things over into their own plans, and you don't have to look at facing all of the taxes and penalties that come with actually dissolving the plan itself. Now, life insurance policies and annuities, those are pretty simple. They have named beneficiaries. But again, you want to be cautious, because a lot of times when you buy a life insurance policy, you'll put somebody in as a beneficiary, and then maybe we're doing a trust 20 years later, and your beneficiaries might have changed. And if we don't take a look at those policies, you could find out that there's a beneficiary in there that you didn't want to have at the time you created the trust. So we always take a look at the life policies and the annuities and see who the beneficiaries are. And you should always have an original named beneficiary and a contingent beneficiary. Usually we like to see the trust as the contingent beneficiary. That way, if your main beneficiary is also deceased, the trust can step in and become the beneficiary of the life insurance without any further problems. So we have a primary beneficiary, and you have a secondary or contingent beneficiary is the best way to do that. Now, that's kind of a generalized view of funding, but I want to emphasize again that it is important to pay attention to funding. Funding is an ongoing thing that you have to keep up with. One of the biggest problems we see these days is we will create a living trust. We fund the real property, the house, into the living trust. And then some years later, the family decides to refinance the house. During the refinance, the title companies will take the house out of the name of the trust by doing a transfer deed out, complete the refinancing, but then for some reason they never put it back in. And this happens all the time. I had a discussion one time with an escrow officer friend of mine, and I said, you know, you take property out of a trust, which is common, you can do that, it's not difficult to do, but why don't you put it back in? Well, we can take the property out, but it needs a lawyer to put it back in. I said, all you do is reverse the names on the deed that you did to put it back in the trust. I don't understand the problem with it. But nevertheless, title companies don't want to do that. Escrow companies don't want to do that. So that's the first place we look. We will look to see what has been refinanced and make sure the property is still in the name of the trust. It is always a good idea that if you have a trust plan, that you look at it every 4 or 5 years to make sure it's up to date and check the funding. Always check the funding. Anytime a client comes back to me to make changes in their trust, one of the first things we do is check the funding. Make sure the funding is up to date. That is one of the most important things you can do, is keeping the funding current. I can't overestimate that. And again, you know, people are well-meaning out there. Don't listen to your neighbor across the street with advice about how to fund your trust. You didn't listen to him and let him create the trust for you. Go back to the person that created the trust for you, to the experts that know how to do this and know what's the best way to get it done. And just ask a simple question. It's not difficult to do, and it will save your family much, much time later on and a lot of expense if the funding is not kept up correctly. So I want to encourage you to do that. Make sure you keep the funding up to date. I want to thank you for taking the time to listen through this podcast. If you ever have any questions about any of this, anything having to do with estate planning, I'm always available. Give me a call. Again, my name is Art Pauly. My last name is P-A-U-L-Y. Phone number, area code 916-207-7526. Or send me an email at artpauly, all one word, at paulylaw.com. Or go to my website at paulylaw.com, and I'll be glad to help you any way that I can. And as I said, I am your mobile estate planning attorney, because I come to you. I come to your home and your businesses and be able to take care of business. Again, thank you very much, and I hope you look forward to the next podcast. So long, everyone, for now.